From Middletown to Pittsburgh, Bala Cynwyd to Altoona, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the cost of gasoline and diesel fuel has hit another all-time high, putting pressure on the trucking industry. And Pennsylvanians are set to go to the polls in an historic and highly competitive primary election. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Steve Bloom are here for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And voters are set to nominate candidates for lieutenant governor. The candidates have gotten little attention, but under the right circumstance, the lieutenant governor becomes a very important person. I'll explain why on my town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation is pushing a hugely unpopular plan to toll a number of bridges located along the interstate highway system. Despite what was effectively a 30-cent increase in gasoline taxes a few years ago, and Pennsylvania having the highest gasoline tax in the nation, PennDOT claims it does not have enough funding to fix crumbling roads and bridges. The bridge tolling plan has generated significant opposition, including from municipalities, which are concerned that the tolls will cause more drivers to use local roads, thus increasing traffic in residential and commercial neighborhoods. PennDOT plans a number of open houses and public meetings to discuss the proposal, which also faces stiff opposition in the legislature. The cost of public employee pensions, especially teacher pensions, is driving up property taxes in many school districts. At the state level, the problem is even more significant and has prompted State Representative Don Kiefer to introduce a reform measure that would change provisions which artificially depress the annual required contribution paid into pension funds. Underpaying those contributions has a ripple effect that dramatically increases the deficit between future defined benefits and funds available to pay those benefits. According to the Center Square, the state pension systems are currently underfunded by over $60 billion, and Kiefer's reform plan is designed to prevent that deficit from growing. Ultimately, taxpayers are on the hook for any shortfall. Many sectors of the economy are struggling to regain their footing as the nation emerges from draconian measures designed to combat the COVID-19 pandemic, but not the gaming industry. Nationwide casinos had their best revenue month ever in March, winning more than $5.3 billion from gamblers. The casinos also had their best first quarter ever. Arkansas, Florida, and New York casinos recorded their best month ever. All this according to the American Gaming Association. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. After a brief pause, gasoline and diesel prices have resumed their upward climb, fueling record inflation and putting the squeeze on everyone who depends on transportation, which is to say, all of us. Here to talk about the causes and impact of the gasoline and diesel price surge is our Capitol Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
It's a pleasure to be here, David.
And also in the studio, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, so nice to see you.
Always happy to be here, David. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. So here we are to talk about circumstances as we find them, and they seem to be just a little more distressing by the day. That inflation is on the march, 8.3%, and that somebody said that that was a reprieve because it had been 8.5% the month previous. It's just like, no, it's still going up. That's not good. But we see, you know, the price spikes, the supply chain difficulties, all these things continue. And, one of the most significant danger signs that we see, Rebecca, is right in your wheelhouse, which is here on the East Coast of the U.S., a historic spike in the price of diesel fuel.
Yep, that's absolutely true. It's higher than it's ever been. Diesel is going through the roof right now, and it's something that a lot of our businesses are dealing with, a lot of our trucking companies. And the one thing that we don't think about is that it also affects a lot of small businesses too, like landscaping companies, construction firms, fuel suppliers, other contracting businesses that drive diesel trucks. So when we think about diesel, we think about the big trucking companies, which obviously are very impacted, but it also affects a lot of your local service companies too.
But your industry is central to the logistics that make the rest of the economy work. And so when the fuel for your vehicles is, I mean, I don't know if there have been scarcity problems yet actually running out of it, but when the price spikes so high that then raises the cost of every single layer of production in the economy, getting raw materials to the manufacturing facility, getting finished goods to the marketplace, getting things from the warehouse to the local distributor. It's like this is one of the things driving inflation, is it not?
That's exactly right. That's what I was just going to say. When you talk about those inflation rates, this is part of what's driving it. There's several factors involved, obviously, in what we're dealing with inflation. But this is a big part of it because, like you said, almost everything is transported by truck. In Pennsylvania specifically, over 96% of manufactured tonnage is transported by truck. So those are the things that we go to buy in the store every day. And they also are raw materials that it also affects the raw materials that go into those manufactured goods. So we're talking about the price of everything you buy is increasing due to this diesel rate. And those prices pyramid over the course of the supply chain.
Right.
So everything you have in your pantry, your refrigerator, your medicine cabinet, your wardrobe, even the fuel that you go to the gas station to fuel your car with, that's transported by truck. And like I said, it's not just the trip on the truck to the grocery store that increases the cost of those goods. It's also the diesel in the farmer's equipment.
Right.
The truck that brought the produce, the raw materials, the packaging to the factory for processing.
Right.
The truck that delivered goods to warehouses and shipping facilities. And lastly, it's that truck that brought it to your local store or your doorstep. So it's just the final stage of the process that you see there. Every part of that supply chain is affected by that cost
increase. And so what is the root cause of this price spike? Is it lack of supply?
Yeah, it's a combination. I mean, it's a basic supply and demand issue, I think. So we've seen with the invasion of Ukraine and a lot of response to taking Russian oil off the market.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know oil is a global commodity, so it's traded globally. So when Russian oil came off the market, which I think, we all support.
Of course.
That just inherently decreased the supply of oil on the world market. So we have a decrease in supply and an increase in demand because consumer goods are still in high demand. People are still buying merchandise. They're still ordering things. They're still purchasing cars. They're still doing all those things that are essential to our economy. And demand is going up for diesel because of that. And supply has decreased. So we're looking at just a basic supply and demand issue. The price goes up when that happens.
Well, and Steve, this also gets to choices that have been made by the Biden administration to constrict domestic energy production, specifically domestic oil and natural gas production.
And it actually goes even beyond the Biden administration. We've really had several decades of environmental extremists in this country gradually shaping an agenda that is hostile to our ability to create or to access the energy we need to power our entire economy here in the United States. And so that cumulative effect, that one difficult regulation after another that makes it more expensive or more challenging or more time consuming to release our natural resources, whether it be oil or natural gas or other energy sources, coal, whatever it may be, that gradually decreases the amount available to folks who need to buy those fuels for whatever particular application they have.
Right.
When you see that, one regulation here, one regulation there, maybe not a big deal right away. But when you see this happening again, decade after decade, at every turn, and especially not only at the federal level, but at the state level.
Very much so.
We've seen it here in Pennsylvania with Governor Wolf and his Department of Environmental Protection that has been hostile toward an industry that has created more jobs in this state and more investment than any other industry in our recent history.
Inflation is a thief that steals from everyone. And that at the same time that it drives prices higher, it also reduces the purchasing power of the dollars that you have, that you do have coming in. And so for families trying to make, you know, kitchen table type decisions, you know, to get to the end of the month, it's like true economic pain that people are experiencing. So, you know, beyond the obvious solution of you know, unleashing domestic energy production, building out infrastructure for delivery, expanding capacity for refining so that we can actually take the raw materials and turn it into the finished product that we need for our fleet. You know, Rebecca, what are the other kinds of areas of relief that we could pursue?
Well, to that list of issues that Steve just raised, and I completely agree with everything, I would add tax policy issues too, because in Pennsylvania, we have the highest diesel tax in the nation. So that is actually contributing to the cost, that we're seeing.
Yeah.
And that comes down to, you know, prioritizing our tax policy in a way that generates economic development and economic activity. And that's not something that we do well in Pennsylvania. I agree about the regulatory environment has been hostile for a long time to energy development, but that's something I think we all agree has to change, but it's not going to happen quickly, unfortunately, because it's going to take a long time to turn around that regulatory environment. It takes a long time to build that infrastructure out, like you said, because we've already made decisions that have set us back in a lot of areas on pipelines, on infrastructure, on permitting, all those things that have got to change. And when they do start to change, it's still going to take a while.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So Steve, sort of building off of what Rebecca said, one of the things that I think is a necessary precursor for these kinds of changes is public demand. Like that when, you know, for the taxpayers, for the wage earner, for the family that's trying to make ends meet, people who are feeling that economic pain of a shrinking paycheck and rising prices, people are going to have to demand from their leaders, we want control of our economic destiny again.
And think about the situation we're in. Focusing on Pennsylvania, we didn't know this even 20 years ago, but our Commonwealth, our state, literally sits on one of the world's greatest reserves of energy.
Yes.
And it happens to be energy in the form of natural gas, which for the most part is drastically cleaner by any measure than coal or oil or other alternative fuels that have been tried.
Correct.
And so we have this abundant, clean, accessible natural resource ready to be used. And it's located literally under the property of thousands and thousands of Pennsylvania citizens who directly benefit from the ability to access
it. You betcha, lease payments and royalty payments.
And that drives an economy, drives growth in the economy. And yet we're locking it up instead of unleashing it. And we look at the situation. We talked a little bit about the geopolitical impact. The situation now where the United States has always been a leader in the world for freedom. We have the resources to transform the global markets for energy, for the fuel of our economy. And our hands are being tied behind our backs by lawmakers and public officials like Governor Wolf, like President Biden, who are putting the clamps on the growth of an industry that has an opportunity instead to be thriving, giving people the opportunity to have great family-sustaining jobs, all in a healthier, cleaner world. And it's all here in Pennsylvania. We could be the leader.
Absolutely. And it really is madness because, I mean, as we've seen with the way that Vladimir Putin has played what is really a weak hand from a weak country with a declining population where life expectancy is dropping, that he has used Russia's energy reserves as essentially a way to pull in foreign currency. It's what funds his regime. And so in that way, you see that energy production and energy exports and energy relationships are an expression of national strength. And that is the same kind of strength that we can and should be offering to the world. And even though our output levels are high, they could be so much higher. And if we did this, if we had the infrastructure to deliver the Pennsylvania natural gas from up on the northern tier where it comes out of the ground, pure methane, and to get that to an LNG terminal somewhere on the Delaware River, and to start sending ships to our allies over in Europe, like that would be so much better for them because they'd be doing business with an ally. We can give them better rates than they would get from, you know, extortionary rates from the Russians. But also when we engage our allies in these energy relationships, which are also economic relationships, we help to disentangle them from these problematic relationships, as with Putin or the OPEC powers or other – or Venezuela, like other hostile powers that are that look to undermine our interests and our allies.
And speaking of hostile powers, one of the ironic features of this whole situation is that Pennsylvania shares a long border with the state of New York.
Yep.
Between – New York lies between Pennsylvania and New England. New York and New England all have a strong demand for fuel, especially natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, because of the policies of the state of New York, we can't build pipelines that get our Pennsylvania natural gas to New York residents, but also to residents of Connecticut, New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont,
yeah.
Rhode Island. All yeah. these – they desperately need the fuel. We can't get it there because of another state's policies.
Correct. Correct. And you know, again, under the U.S. Constitution, the whole point of the Interstate Commerce Clause was for the federal government to step in when states interfered from those kinds of
transactions.
Imagine
if New York decided that you cannot transport Pennsylvania corn or wheat through the state of New York.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what this is equivalent
Correct.
To.
Correct. Correct. And the you know, an even more bitter irony is that in the absence of Pennsylvania natural gas, that the New Englanders are burning more of what? Wood in wood-burned stoves and home heating oil, both of which expel much more carbon than natural gas.
Not to mention all sorts of other pollutants that are not present in Pennsylvania natural gas.
Correct.
Right. And also buying energy from Russia, which we've seen happen in past winters.
We're going to have a change of administration. There will be a new governor in January of next year, and a whole new General Assembly and at least half of the state Senate. All these folks are going up for election, and that the decisions that they make, you know, in Harrisburg regarding Pennsylvania's economy, regarding Pennsylvania energy production, all those things will get decided in Harrisburg. And so, you know, as we're looking at the primary election next Tuesday, it's, you know, as ever, folks who've listened to this show have heard me say that representative self-government is not a spectator sport, that it's incumbent on all of us to live life with our brains turned on, to choose to be informed, and most of all, to exercise our citizenship.
And when you look at, in particular, the national impact of the election here in Pennsylvania that's taking place Tuesday and then in the fall, we're looking at potentially – the votes here in Pennsylvania changing the control of the U.S. Senate from the tied up situation it is now, where the Democrats have control through the vice president, or potentially changing as well the balance of power in the House of Representatives in Washington. So those votes are going to be on the ballot essentially Tuesday, the precursor to those votes that will happen in November. You have, obviously, as you mentioned, an open gubernatorial seat, but also the control of our state General Assembly, both our House and our Senate. And these are crucial to all the policies that citizens care about. And again, when you feel the burn of the paying $5.55 a gallon for gasoline, or you're suffering with that 8.3%, the pain of that 8.3% inflation rate, there's a way you can fix it, and it's through the ballot box.
Yeah. And because we need – I mean, Rebecca, we need pro-growth leaders. We need a strong – bipartisan consensus for a pro-production agenda.
Yeah, and as Steve pointed out, I mean, these policies that we're dealing with and the effects of these policies are the result of policy choices that have been made in Washington and Harrisburg. So the bad news is that those decisions have been made and they're impacting us now. But the good news is that voters have the ability to change them.
Amen.
So that's why everyone needs to get out and vote next week for sure. This is our primary and we got a big, of course, the general election coming up in November.
But who goes on the ballot in November gets
exactly.
settled on Tuesday.
Yep. And I know, I mean, we hear all the time, this is the most important election ever. But as you heard from Steve, there's a lot at stake this year, a lot at stake, and especially in Pennsylvania. So let's get out there and vote.
And again, one more way that citizens need to be informed is that we have different district maps. So your state representative, your state senator, your member of the U.S. House, these things could have and probably did change. So make sure that you know who the candidates are, who the incumbents are, and where they stand on these critical issues so that you can make your voice heard.
Because there are stark differences between a lot of the candidates this year. So you really do have to do your homework. Make sure you know who's on your ballot before you go in there and what policies they're advocating.
And it's you know, again, we are blessed as Americans to have such a great legacy of liberty that we are able to choose, who leads our government. Locally and at the state level and at the federal level, and that this is something that you know, in my opinion, really is a sacred thing. It's a sacred trust, and that, you know, much blood and treasure was spilled to establish these rights and even more to preserve these rights, and that's why it's up to us to take that responsibility seriously. So anyway, as ever, we're grateful to have this time to spend with you listeners, and with that, we'll go around the horn here, ask our friends, Steve, where can people go to find out more about you and your group and the things that you do?
The Commonwealth Foundation website is commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to find out more about you and your group?
They can learn about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Under the right circumstances, which have occurred twice in recent state history, the Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania can be the most important office in the Commonwealth. This year, however, the campaign for that office has become little more than a footnote, as highly competitive races for the U.S. Senate and governor have dominated the spotlight. There are many oddities surrounding the office, beginning with the process of electing the lieutenant governor. Candidates for lieutenant governor run in a standalone vote during the primary, then are paired with their party's candidate for governor as a ticket in the general election. The Pennsylvania Constitution describes few duties to the lieutenant governor, who basically serves as president of the state Senate and presides over that body in a largely ceremonial role. It is at the discretion of the governor to assign other duties to the lieutenant governor. Some have chosen to give significant portfolios to their second-in-command, as did Tom Ridge when he put Mark Schweiker in charge of emergency services, and Tom Corbett, who delegated a variety of significant duties to Jim Colley. Other governors, including current Governor Tom Wolf, have had a rocky relationship with their lieutenant governor. Wolf and his first lieutenant governor, Mike Stack, were frequently at odds, causing Wolf to distance himself from Stack, who lost his bid for re-election to current Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. Otherwise, the Lieutenant Governor basically sits around waiting for something to happen to the big guy. That has occurred twice since the current state constitution went into effect. Lieutenant Governor Mark Single became acting governor when Robert P. Casey Sr. underwent multiple organ transplants and a lengthy recovery. Mark Schweiker became governor following the resignation of Tom Ridge, who was tapped as a Homeland Security advisor by President George W. Bush in the wake of the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. The two major parties have had vastly different political experiences with their nominees for lieutenant governor. Pittsburgh Mayor Peter Flaherty was nominated for governor in 1978 defeating in the primary, among others, the real Bob Casey. Running for lieutenant governor was an Allegheny County biology teacher, also named Robert P. Casey. He won the primary, then proved to be a drag on what was ultimately a losing ticket. And then there was the awkward pairing of Philadelphia Mayor Ed Rendell with State Treasurer Catherine Baker Knoll. Republicans have largely avoided a disconnect at the top of the ticket through an endorsement process that yielded compatible candidates. This year, however, for the first time in memory, the GOP did not endorse in statewide races, as the large field of candidates for all three statewide offices made consensus elusive. As a result, the Republican race for the lieutenant governor nomination has become a free-for-all, but until recently run largely under the radar screen. Teddy Daniels, a retired police officer from Wayne County, became embroiled in a messy domestic situation that spilled over into the legal system. He was quickly exonerated, but the case made headlines. Daniels was also in the news following a dust-up with fellow candidate Russ Diamond, a state representative who has taken aim at Daniels in social media videos. The other candidates have been seeking to distinguish themselves from the pack. Jeff Coleman, a former state representative who now runs a public relations firm, is campaigning on a platform of returning civility to the political process. Civility, however, has been largely absent as negative ads have dominated the airwaves this primary season. Republican voters have a field of candidates with a wide variety of backgrounds from which to choose. John Brown is a former Northampton County executive who previously was nominated for state auditor general. State Representative Carrie Del Rosso entered the race after her district was rendered uncompetitive in redistricting. Chris Fry is the mayor of Newcastle. Former State Representative Rick Saccone is joined on the ballot by businessman James Jones of Montgomery County and Clarice Schillinger, who ran a political action committee backing conservative school board candidates. Democrats have a much smaller field of candidates. State Representative Austin Davis of Allegheny County is endorsed by the party's lone candidate for governor, Attorney General Josh Shapiro, but faces a challenge from State Representative Brian Sims of Philadelphia and Montgomery County banker Ray Sosa. In a state as large as Pennsylvania, those names are largely unfamiliar to most voters. But as Election Day approaches, voters should learn as much as possible about each of them because, well, you just never know. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGET-AM and WGTY-FM in Gettysburg, along with WVMM-FM in Grantham, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.